The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. Happy Tuesday already. We're moving right along, as they say, during the week. An awful lot going on, too much to track. We do our best, and you can find a good summation of it at the website. I'm putting up about 150 stories a day now. Used to be around 100, so it's up there. And some of it is, you know, just rather superfluous. Others are very relevant and very important, and you would always have to use discernment when you read or consider anything anymore. Don't just accept anything in total. It doesn't work. Not anymore. Very, very hard to do that and get away with it. So I've never heard more differing opinions, different viewpoints, and absolutely for sure diagnoses of issues of international geopolitics, financial, it doesn't matter, the economy, certainly natural resources. Underlying all, being, as you know, someone who despises electric vehicles, even though they still use ultimately petroleum in many ways, to not only to produce them but to fuel them, something's making that electricity coming through those charging stations. It's all about oil. And if anything, I think when we look back in history over the last century or more, pipelines. Think about pipelines. Think about the human physiology and arteries and veins and all that, how they connect and deliver the goods. Well, pipelines do much the same thing. However, they're used for, think about dollars or rubles or yuan. It's all about money flowing through there, not nutrition or oxygen for the body. These pipelines are really amazing when you think about them, how they internationally connect not only countries but people, regions, secret organizations, you name it. There's a wonderful new book out. It's all about pipelines. And if you can go to Guess, by all means, do so and look in there, and you'll find the name right at the top, Charlotte Dennett. And she's got a new book out that talks about pipelines in a fashion that you don't hear anywhere else. She's really broken brand new ground, and it's fascinating. We're going to hear a lot this hour that we've never heard before, and I'm looking forward to it because I always learn. We always learn. This is remarkable. Just to read a little bit from her site on this one particular page, we have launched this website, writes Charlotte, in the belief that following some of the world's most famous pipelines, follow them along, connect the dots, gives you a better handle on understanding some of the world's most vexing conflicts, most recently around Ukraine. The sabotage of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, boy, was that outrageous. And I admire the restraint of the victims of that. That was a bad scene, remains a bad scene. It's evidence of the great game for oil and gas being played on steroids. For months, the world speculated as to Who was responsible? Like, we couldn't figure it out. Until investigative journalist Cy Hirsch tried to put that speculation to rest by accusing the U.S. Navy of conducting a secret underwater operation that remotely triggered explosives that 3 months later destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines. It's remarkable. Each set, by the way, one and two, they are sets. They're two parallel pipelines. And this controversy is not going to go away anytime soon. One more little intro here. I'm going to introduce this properly. From the daughter of America's first master spy, America's first master spy in the Middle East, Charlotte Dennett offers a different perspective on the wars raging in Israel, Gaza, and Ukraine based on decades of research into the mysterious death of her father after his top-secret mission to Saudi Arabia. Daniel Dennett was the head of counterintelligence for the Central Intelligence Group. That's the immediate forerunner of the CIA, when he traveled to Saudi Arabia in 1947, the year of the Roswell crash. We're going to have fun with that. To determine the route of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline and whether it would terminate in Lebanon or Haifa, Palestine. His plane crashed 2 weeks after he filed his last report. And I go back to what I've said for decades. They kill people all the time. Human life means nothing in the great game of money. And with that, I'm going to shut up. Hello, Charlotte, and welcome to the program. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you for writing the book.
Well, thank you, Jeff. That was a great introduction. Not every interviewer sort of grasps such key points as you are doing, and you told me you have a pretty sophisticated audience as well, so I'm delighted to be on your show.
Well, thank you. Now, these are the best. These are great people. They really care. They think. They don't rush to judgment, and if they disagree, that's fine. They know that. That's the right. We all have that God-given right. We don't have to agree. This is all about putting out information and letting people make their own determination. So, tell us where you'd like to start, and let's jump in. This is quite a scene.
Well, I probably should start with what's on most people's minds these days, and that's the war in Israel and against Hamas. One aspect of this war, which is very crucial to understanding it, is the economic aspect of it, and most precisely, the role of oil and natural gas in causing this havoc. The coast of Israel and Gaza is on the eastern Mediterranean, and beginning in 2000, huge quantities of oil and natural gas were found off the coast of Israel. It was off the Gaza Strip where there was some of the first explorations that went on, and British Gas was contacted by the Palestinian Authority, which at the time had control over Gaza, to explore the area. What they discovered was a very sizable reserves, as I say, of oil and natural gas. And what I learned is that by following the pipelines was that this incredibly important natural resource was being eyed very carefully by the Israelis. And I learned that two of the major assaults on Gaza by Israel, by the Likud, primarily that was in control, was against Gaza to destroy Hamas and make sure the Palestinians did not get control over this oil and natural gas. This is documented. This is documented in my book. Statements by some of the players in the region who stated exactly. They just, you know, there was no way they were going to allow the Palestinians to benefit from this great wealth, which at the time. At the time was estimated to be $1 billion worth, right? Which it's now all the oil and natural gas off that coast, ready for this, worth $500 billion dollars. And mm-hmm. that's based on a UN report. Well, so a lot's happened since then.
Yeah.
But,
there were
statements that they didn't want the Palestinians to get a hold of it because they claimed that this right. vast wealth was going to go to support terrorism. And, you know, Yasser Arafat, who was then alive and in charge of the Palestinian Authority, when he heard about it, what his statement was, oh, my God, at last the Palestinian people can develop their own economy and have some autonomy.
Sure.
And but that didn't come to be. And ever since then, they have not been able to have access to that natural gas.
So here, a couple things, Charlotte,
ahead.
If I might.
Sure.
First of all, it's quite amusing when you think about it that, as we know, the Israeli Mossad or parts of the Israeli government, the CIA, were essentially behind the founding of Hamas in the first place to oppose Arafat. They wanted a buffer in there, and they put it together, from what I can understand. Now, maybe that's wrong, but that's the common knowledge that I get when I read about these things. But secondly...
Yeah, go ahead.
Comment on that first.
Well, Netanyahu was in favor of this, interestingly
uh-huh.
enough.
It's true.
If the Palestinian Authority was allowed to control Gaza, then the Palestinian Authority had the right to that natural gas. So what Netanyahu did is he supported Hamas being in Gaza, and it was divide and rule. So then you have two competing authorities, you know, the Palestinian Authority on the West Bank and Gaza on the Gaza Strip. And he mm-hmm. was able to paint the Hamas as a terrorist organization, which should never get a hold of that vast natural resource because it would, quote unquote, go to supporting terrorism.
I have to laugh because, look, people are people, right? Everybody has a certain lust for material wealth. But if you wave $500 billion worth of oil and gas in front of the Zionist Israeli government and then look at pictures of all the destroyed cities in Gaza, you'd be able to figure it out pretty easily. They're going to get that oil and gas or everyone's going to die there. They don't care. That's $500 billion worth.
Well,
that's
tragic.
Me talking. I'm not speaking for Charlotte. That's just my view.
Well, what I've come to find out is that the plan is to, that's been in the works for quite a while mm-hmm. Is to develop an energy corridor along the eastern Mediterranean, and that will have pipelines that bring the natural gas and oil through pipelines up the coast into Europe. And, of course, Europe now is especially with winter coming, ever since the Ukraine war, the Europeans are really worried about whether they're going to have enough natural gas to heat their homes, their industries, oil to, you know, feed their industries as well. And, by the way, oil is the fuel of the military.
Mm-hmm.
The military everywhere is the largest consumer of oil, and that's why you never hear about it. You watch all your TV, you don't hear about it, it's heavily censored. And the only reason I know about it is because my father was on a super secret mission to Saudi Arabia way back in 1947 mm-hmm. to determine the route of the Trans-Arabian pipeline that was going to carry incredibly valuable Saudi oil to Europe to help the reconstruction of Europe after the war. And when I started investigating his death, which happened by a mysterious plane crash about 2 weeks after his visit, I got into the tap line, it was called, and started reading about it and learning that it was of monumental importance to the United States. It enabled the U.S. to become a superpower in the Middle East, much to the concern, shall we say, of our allies, the British, the French, and the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I learned is they're all competing against each other, subterranean. No one knows about it, but that's what's going on. They all want to get their hands on the oil and natural gas because they learned a lesson from World War II. Germany ran out of gas, its whole, you know, airplanes, its tanks, and so on, lost right. in both world wars because they ran out of gas. So this was a lesson to any power that wants to be a superpower. They got to get control no matter what. And one of the things that my father wrote in one of his declassified documents was, it was about Saudi Arabia. He said, we must control the oil at all costs. And this has been a meme I've discovered that carries all the way up to the present. And it influences all your major powers, your governments. That's their number one priority. So here you see just this massive destruction of Gaza. Mm-hmm. No bank will finance an infrastructure project like a pipeline project as long as there's unrest there, which I sort of understand, you know. Otherwise, it's going to be in jeopardy.
I wouldn't want to take that. Right. No.
Yeah,
that's all compromised now.
Folks.
All right. This is fascinating. I originally heard, I don't know how long, 15 years ago, a long time ago, about this oil and gas that was there, but it was really quashed. Nobody talked much about it. It was a little leak here and there. It was a big secret. And I wondered about that ever since. And now, thanks to your book, but I've heard more about it in the last 2 weeks than I have in the last 15 years. So it's being talked about. The secret is kind of out.
I have a map in my book that shows mm-hmm. where these gas, oil and gas fields are located. And in the caption under the map, and this was done in 2022, I wrote that this area is a tinderbox waiting to happen. That's what I said. And we're in the tinderbox now.
Is there any doubt in your mind, and I already know the answer, I'm kind of just being rhetorical here, that this attack, this surprise attack on brave little Israel on October 7th by Hamas, was anything less than a set-up operation, an inside job, another 9/11, if you will?
That's amazing that you should say that. It really is. The fact that Netanyahu is calling it Israel's 9/11 and saying that Israel got caught by surprise, like, give me a break. I mean, Israel is one of the most heavily monitored regions in the world, much like New York and Washington, D.C. at the time of 9/11. And and it begs the question how these things could have happened and could not have been monitored. We already know that 9/11, there had been warnings about it about planes crashing into towers and so on, that there had been warnings. And the same thing in Israel. I looked into this. And the Egyptian intelligence had warned Netanyahu. That's one thing. The Egyptians are heavily involved in this whole region, and they infiltrated Hamas. They knew what was going on, and they warned. And the warning was ignored. And to my mind, arguably, Netanyahu may have let it happen, because then he got the perfect pretext to go in and finish the
absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I bet on it.
Finish the job that he tried in 2009 and 2014. Two massive attacks on Gaza, but nothing like this one. So, it's just stunning. He is going to reckon. There's going to be a reckoning once this whole thing is over, because a lot of the Israelis are really upset with him. How could he have
furious.
Allowed such a massive intelligence failure, et cetera?
He's stuck in a very odd position. He has to wear the collar of having been tricked by Hamas, when in reality he was intimately involved with the whole thing, in my view. Again, I'm speaking for myself. I've looked at too many videos of IDF men and women who worked on that Gaza wall. They were there. They were familiar and intimately with the technology used. They said, this is a joke. There's no way that they could have done any of this. The army was stood down for 4.5 to 7 hours, depending on who you talk to. They went into the kibbutzes with tanks and destroyed homes full of Israelis. They killed an awful lot of Israelis, their own people. as did the Apache attack helicopters, another gift from the U.S. They mowed down those people at that musical concert, that event, blew up vehicles. They've admitted it now. It's even been in Haaretz newspaper that they have
Wait, clearly. Let me stop you there. Are you saying the IDF was involved?
The IDF actually killed probably as many Israelis as Hamas did.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, I would like to see that documentation. Send it on to me.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of it.
I had heard, but it was not confirmed to me.
One other thing. We even have the cockpit voice recordings of the Apache attack helicopter pilots saying, we don't know who to shoot down there. There's thousands of people at this concert. Who do we shoot? Oh. And they were told, use your discretion. So they unloaded and flew back to base and reloaded ammunition, went back and killed a whole bunch more people. And just like the tanks went into this particular kibbutz, and one of the women who survived it said, they blew up house after house, our own tanks, with Israelis in them.
Oh, my God. Well, I haven't seen that at all. I don't know where found it, but, boy, I would like to see that. Because one thing that one person told me, but I said, where's your documentation? I can't say it, but I can guess. I can hypothesize that a lot of those young people that were, you know, partying outside there at the concert, they were actually, you know, peace activists. And that the reason that they were gunned down and shot is because Netanyahu wanted to get rid of them because they were causing all sorts of turmoil against his regime, so to speak.
He was,
you know,
every week, 30,000
demonstrations.
30,000 people a week were demonstrating to get rid of that guy. They hated him.
He hated them.
I think you're right. I think that's a very viable thing. They have no problem sacrificing their own people. They just don't. Sad to say.
It's terrible.
A fact. I've seen videos. I'll bet I've seen 8 or 9 videos. I've run several of them on the website of former officers, current officers in the IDF who worked that border region, that wall specifically, say there's no way this happened. A cat cannot get near that wall. We know everything about it before it even gets close. No way. And they, even though they did stand down the arm, they still knew they had the best technology in the world to surveil both sides of that wall. It just didn't happen the way it's... But here's, as I said, here's Netanyahu. He has to say, gee, we were surprised. We had a failure at the military level. When in reality, he knows the other side of the coin. He's stuck in a funny position. The guy is evil to me. I look at him and I see evil. I always have. He's not going to last,
is what I understand. And that's another reason why he wants to extend the war. He's like Trump, you know, he wants to stay out of jail because there are indictments against him for corruption and other crimes, apparently.
Yes. So what happens when things get tough? You take people to war. That's what they do almost every
time. Which Bush did. George W. Bush, same thing.
Freak.
He was very unpopular before this thing happened. Boy, didn't 9/11 make him a wartime president?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other program or 10. That was, again, another setup. The Mossad was deeply involved in that. We know a lot of things about that. One of the key Mossad agents, Daniel Levin, or Levin, I forget what his full name is. We don't know if he died or not. They found two of the planes ultimately in a hangar. Was it Cleveland? Somewhere. And it looked like that they were landed there, and the people were all gassed, and then the bodies were taken off, and the planes were repainted.
What? Whoa.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. And this,
my
these
goodness.
Are things
well,
that,
I will tell you, I am a board member of a group called Lawyers for 9/11 Inquiry. So I know a lot as well, but I hadn't heard that one.
That's true. I don't know if it's true, but it came from good sources. They found two of the planes out at the end of a runway off to the side, and they were then moved into a hangar, and nobody walked out, so to speak. They just killed those people.
Oh.
And the planes that hit the towers were remote controlled.
Yes. There's a whole group, thousands of pilots in Islamic nations that are calling for a new inquiry because they said there's no way those planes could have been flown that way by some inexperienced pilots. And they have suggested they were remote controlled.
Good to hear. So you're an attorney as well?
Yes.
Uh-huh. I didn't know. That's good. Here's the thing. What we've tried to do here on the program for forever is to tell people that there are not just two sides to a coin anymore. You really got to do some serious thinking about these things to understand the depth of the perversion and corruption that is in reality responsible for many of these monumental acts which stampede the public. They know how to control the people. That's what this is all about. So now, here's Netanyahu stuck in the middle. I do not like that man, and I hope you're right, and he's got to go. But look, if he goes, what's he leave behind? A destroyed Gaza, 15,000 dead already, and maybe 20, 25, we don't even know. So what's he leaving behind? The Israelis are going to get their hands on that oil and gas one way or the other. That's the way I see it. I think you're 100% right. They'll start selling it off to Europe, and they'll be even richer. I mean, what they get now is unlimited money from this country. I call it the U.S.-Israel war against Gaza and Palestinians. Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
Biden's,
because we gave them the planes.
Initial comments were just appalling.
Oh, he is. Well, it's Obama is running the government, basically. He's not the ultimate, but he's implementing the day-to-day control of the useless Biden pedophile government. It's Barry Sotoro, Barack Obama. That's who it is. He's a mile away from the White House in a mansion, or he was. Susan Rice, Powers was in there. Anyway, they were running the show. I'm getting in the way here. I'm going to step back. Go ahead, please. You're the master.
Let me say this, just to move away a little bit from the horrendous scene in Gaza.
Yeah.
What I did is I once I understood the geopolitical importance of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline, I started to trace back in time, and I started to look forward in time. I looked back in time because there was a wonderful New York Times article, March 2, 1947, and it was all about the Trans-Arabian Pipeline and what its importance was to the United States and all the powers that were going to vie against it. So a key sentence in that article was that the military and economic security of the pipeline was extremely important, which, of course, tied right in to what my father had said in 1944, 3 years earlier. We must control the oil. You must protect the oil at all costs. What have the costs been? My God, when we think of all those wars that have happened in the past seven decades, I mean, so I have started to write on the theme of oil and genocide. They seem to go together. And the reason I say this is previous to this
I was just thinking that exact thing. I think that's a perfect tie-in. Good to hear you. I urge you
to
do that.
First of all, with my husband, Jerry Colby, another author and investigative journalist, we went down to South America in the 70s. I had come back from Lebanon. I'd been a reporter there, and I'd been shot at, and I decided I'm not up for this right now. I think I'll go back to the New York, primarily because at the time, the outbreak of the Civil War, I didn't understand what it was about, and it made no sense. So I went back to New York and ended up going with my soon-to-be husband on a trip to Latin America. And what were we investigating? The genocide of indigenous peoples in the Amazon. We had heard reports about it. We had heard that the CIA might be involved. We knew that evangelical missionaries had these really sophisticated airplanes and radio networks and so on. And, you know, it got one wondering, well, who's supporting these people? And what we ultimately found out the missionaries whose role was to pacify the Indians, you know, to allow the big oil companies and the agribusiness companies and the ranches to move in on their lands. Uh-huh. That's a whole other subject. But the point is, we learned they were used, and who was using them? They used to say they got all their money from their churches. What we found out is it was big corporate America that was funding them, helping them, so they could move on indigenous lands. And the title of our book, it took us 18 years to do the research and writing of this book, and the title is, it's another long one, Thy Will Be Done, that's biblical reference, Thy Will Be Done, The Conquest of the Amazon, Nelson Rockefeller, and Evangelism in the Age of Oil. What we found out is Rockefeller had built a whole private enterprise in Latin America, and he did it during World War II. He was called the coordinator of inter-American affairs, and being a Republican, nonetheless, he was appointed by FDR to go in and get the Germans out of Latin America, and becoming more Americanized. So that's what he did, and we document all the different methods that they use. And when it came to genocide of the Indians, you start with the missionaries, you get them to pacify the Indians. It's the same thing that happened in the American West, the conquest of the American West. And when that doesn't work, you do things like leave smallpox blankets on riverbeds and candy laced with arsenic. That
yes,
also
ma'am.
Came out of the conquest of the West. And when that doesn't work, you send in the military and slaughter them. 100,000 were killed between 1960s and 1970. So that's where I sort of cut my teeth on understanding oil power. And one of the reviewers of that book called it an anatomy of conquest. Once you understood the mechanisms that they use to conquer a piece of territory, then you can apply it to many parts of the world. So what I started to do was apply it to the Middle East. I was born in Lebanon, so I have a real close feeling for the area, and that's what I did. I can tell you I found out that the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, they were all related to pipeline wars. If you want to talk to me about that, I'm happy to do it.
Let me just take that and step into that poor, beleaguered country, Syria. Americans, right now, this minute, as we're talking, and all of you know this, the U.S. military has taken control of Syria's best oil assets, their best oil fields, and we are stealing and have been stealing their oil for, 2 years now? Taking it out by thousands of annual tanker trucks, countless mega millions of oil being stolen from Syria all the time out of their oil fields. And that's one of the reasons they're attacking military bases over there in Iraq and Syria. The people there have just had it with this theft and this gouging of their resources. It's
right.
Unbelievable.
Yep, and you may remember Trump's memorable comments, because he was about to withdraw the troops, and he got a lot of pushback from that. And so he changed his mind. He said, "Oh, all right, we'll keep the troops there to protect our oil." That's what he said. I mean, it was they were appalled.
Yeah.
He actually blurted this out. But that's what they're there. They're there ostensibly to stop ISIS, ISIS, and but the real reason is they want to protect that oil.
They've stolen it. We stole it. We've got it,
and
we're not going to give it back to Syria. Simple. They're not going to happen.
Yep. The Assad regime apparently was so weakened that they had to endure this humiliation, and I guess thought, well, you know, we don't need ISIS coming after us, because it was. So there's probably some secret agreement on that, but I'm sure the Assad regime was not happy about it. And one of the things I discovered is that this whole civil war in Syria happened when Assad rejected a pipeline project that was going to take natural gas from Qatar, which is located on the coast of the Arabian Peninsula and is very rich in natural gas. The idea was to run a pipeline across Saudi Arabia and then through Turkey up through Europe and Syria and through Syria. And Syria rejected it. Why? Well, because Syrians... masters were the Russians, and the Russians didn't like this idea at all, because they could see that it was trying to bypass all these Russian networks of pipelines all over Europe, et cetera. And so then what Abbas did is he had another plan, and it was to have Iranian oil and natural gas go through Syria and then on up through Europe. And the Russians were not that threatened by that one. And when he did that, all hell broke out. And that's when a resistance to his regime that started as many believe it was a legitimate protest because Assad was an authoritarian ruler, but it soon devolved and degenerated into the civil war. And all sorts of enemies of Syria combined, and that meant ISIS was there. I think Al-Qaeda might have been there. And they were trying to bring down the Syrian regime, and they failed largely because the Russians came in and supported him. But meanwhile, there were, you know, all these accusations that it was the Syrians that were dropping chemical gas on the people.
That was disputed later on
by an MIT professor who is an expert in this. I mean, the propaganda and the lies just go on and on. It's just appalling. And unfortunately, a lot of the mainstream media just parrots, you know, what they're told and
absolutely.
Don't dig deeper.
It's the same control mechanism is running all this. So, yes, the media will do as it's told. The American people have very little chance of discerning truth and reality anymore. Not to say that many of them even care, because they tragically have been, many of them have been dumbed down. And we're now getting to the end game where students in some areas of the country, I think Baltimore, certainly the entire state of Oregon now, no longer have to be proficient in reading, writing, and arithmetic to get a high school diploma. Because that's discriminatory against the lesser able portions of society, shall we say. It's racist to hold them all to a single uniform graduation test. So they don't even have to take it anymore. They get a diploma for now. They've decertified the value of a diploma 100% in Oregon. And now in New Jersey, the teachers union has decided that no longer, these are news stories that I post, no longer has to be staffed by and joined by teachers who are proficient in reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's the same thing. So it's the students now and the teachers, at least in New Jersey, who are no longer required. It's babysitting. What are they doing if they're not teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic? It's babysitting. That's all it is. And these people are getting dumber all the time. The average American is now far less mentally equipped than his grandparents were. The 1949 high school graduation exam, and I forget which state it was, I don't think most college students could pass it now. We used to be a very intelligent society in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and then it started to go down. It was taken down. And now
it's
way
corporate
down.
Control has a lot to do with it, I think.
You betcha.
I mean, we've become so corporatized, and it's in their interest to keep us dumb. They don't want us uncovering all their misdeeds.
No, of course not. And not to say that they're... Have you seen anybody, Charlotte, of any substance actually held accountable and brought to what we used to call justice? I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to lead you, but I don't see anybody. Who's going to hold these people? Who's going to hold the Israelis accountable? The International Criminal Court? Don't make me laugh. It's all run by the same people. It's like Nuremberg.
Yeah, they've budged on this. I mean, the Palestinians have brought war crimes evidence to them, and they're not handling it right. It's very tragic, really sad.
We have lost the planet. We have to a power elite, oil and gas, whatever, precious metals. It's all about money and control. These people just don't get it. And I'm not knocking anybody, but they don't have a chance to get it anymore because they're out of the game. They're addicted to their cell phones. They're addicted to the flat screen. Those two media alone create in their minds the general reference of reality that they rely upon to make decisions in life. It comes from the phones and the TV, flat screens, computers, whatever. They're controllable. It's beyond belief how easy it is to control most people now. And I'm not talking about you people listening, but and wherever you are around the world, there are always intelligent people of all ages. They know and they have an intellect that drives them to learn, even if the schools don't teach learning anymore. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it's really something. You know, coming back to Gaza and Israel.
Half a trillion dollars, friends. Don't forget what Charlotte said. $500 billion of oil and gas is either under Gaza or right offshore from Gaza. That's
a lot of money. And under the West Bank.
Oh, there too?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh no!
Yep, you got these settlements moving in, and the Zionist propaganda machine is just running full time, and it's always been very effective. When I was in Lebanon in the 70s, you know, there were often these border skirmishes in southern Lebanon with Israel, and we would get reports back that some of them, or maybe most of them, were started by Israel, but the propaganda worked, and it was always the Arabs who were blamed. And then, you know, the old story came out, if you dared to criticize, you were anti-Semitic. And, of course, the Holocaust always came up. Like, whenever there was an excursion, there was this, you know, battles going on, then the fundraising would go on. And it's just appalling. I mean, when you live over there, you see such a different reality than you're getting in the media in the United States. When I came back from Lebanon in 75 and met Jerry, and I told him, I said, Jerry, the most censored part of the world is the Middle East because of the oil and so on. Then he had written a major book on the DuPonts called DuPont Behind the Nylon Curtain, and I learned through him that there's another whole area that you never hear about, and that's the 1%, the super wealthy. You don't hear about them at all either. So there are just certain topics that are taboo in our efforts to understand the world. But I am thinking that there are some people who think this whole war is a watershed, that Israel's overreaction and disproportionate war, you know, just horrible. It is genocide, by the way. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's the perfect definition of genocide. You go after a specific group, an ethnic group. Your plan is to wipe them out, and you don't provide them medical care. You don't provide them fuel or food, and you cause massive displacement. That is genocide and ethnic cleansing. And these poor people, they remember the Nakba, 1948, they were driven out of Israel, and now it's happening again and even worse. It's so appalling that much of the world is condemning it, as you can see. And, you know, there are some Jewish groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, for instance, has played a major role. You've seen them demonstrating in the Capitol.
Yes. Yes.
And I have great hope for them. I feel like if anyone's going to change the mindset particularly American Jews, who have been very much indoctrinated with the whole great myth of Israel as being a refuge for the Jews, and you know, they've had to face a lot of struggles, and now there are Jews saying, this war is not making us safer. It most definitely hasn't, because of the rise of anti-Semitism since this thing.
Correct.
I mean, it's predictable. Of course, it's going to happen. And
big
so
backfire.
Maybe we have a bit of a watershed here that we hadn't in previous times because of the sheer brutality of what Netanyahu has done. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I don't know how is brave little Israel is going to shake off this, these images of just absolutely World War II destroyed cities and urban areas from one end to the other of Gaza. I don't see it. It's going to be something that's going to, they're going to wear it around their necks for a long time, and it as it should be. And we should be equally as culpable because we're making it happen. We are. If we didn't pump money in there and everything, we are 50% of the problem. Of course, not us. It's, we've been overthrown. This government is not our government anymore. It's not our government. They're not representing the people. There's no love by and for the people there at all. These are all career criminals for the most part. Do you know about Shulamit Aloni and what she says about how... Oh, this is...
Often
you need to hear this. Hold on. She was on PBS radio with Amy Goodman some years ago, and Amy Goodman asked her a question about people being critical of Israel and how the term anti-Semitism is dredged up and thrown around, or Holocaust denier is dredged up and thrown around. And she asked this former minister of the Knesset, Shulamit Aloni, what's the truth? And she said, we always use that. That's our game. Here, listen, this is 2 minutes long, not even. This is the former minister of Knesset. She was, I believe, involved with the education program in Israel. And here's a little bit of Amy Goodman and Shulamit Aloni.
Is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government? People here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it. When from Europe somebody is criticizing Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money. And the ties between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong. It's very easy to blame people who criticize certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic and to bring up the Holocaust and the suffering of the Jewish people, and that justify everything we do to the Palestinians.
Often,
wow.
There you go. So
yeah,
it's right. She laid it right out. It's one of the classic little sound bites. Yeah.
She must be called a Jew-hating...
self-hating
what do they
Jew.
Say if you're self-hating Jew? It's been very, very powerful. You know, it totally... It shuts up the critics. You know, they can destroy whole careers by
two
simple accusations.
Oh, just wiped out people. Completely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we don't... We don't play that game here. We try and stand on reality as much as we can discern it, and we've got a pretty good handle on it. These people, and it's not all Jews. There's some really good people of all faiths and religions. I never put all people of any group in one basket. It's stupid. We don't do that. But unfortunately, the control mechanism in Israel right now is absolutely genocidal and psychopathically so. These people are killing and killing and killing over there. No concern whatsoever for humanity or the normal morals that we have as human beings. They're not like us. They think differently. They laugh at morality. They think it's weakness. And they'll do whatever they want. And who's their cash cow? Us.
Yeah.
Us. Whatever they want. Us. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the vote on supplying Israel with more, how many billions more that
right.
Biden has asked. Now, it'll
right.
be very interesting to see how that plays out, because the longer this assault on Gaza happens, mm-hmm. The harder it's going to be. They'll probably pass it. I'm guessing they probably will have enough votes.
Where does most of the money go for campaigns for these people? It goes right into their coffers from who? From organizations that are very sympathetic, if not directly connected to international Zionism. That's just the truth.
Well, it's
where the money comes from.
It is a tragic truth, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when I came back from Lebanon, I figured that there was no way I was going to write about the Middle East during this period, because it was impossible. You
mm-hmm.
couldn't get the truth out. Things finally started to change in 1982 when Israel had invaded Lebanon, and in conjunction with the right-wing phalangist Christian regime, the Christians are the major the ethnic group that controls the presidency, and the Muslims have lesser positions. But anyway, at this time, it was Christian phalangists who teamed up with Israel and went on a rampage at two Palestinian refugee camps called Sabra and Shatila. And it was a big deal. It got a lot of press coverage. And that's when the world began to take a second look at Israel. I remember, because I was hearing more efforts to understand the Palestinians then, because it was such a grotesque massacre. And then it sort of drifted away again. And by the way, the Palestinians, when I was there, were so desperate to get world attention, they began hijacking airplanes. I don't know if many of your listeners remember that, but it was a desperate act, because they were totally marginalized. No one cared about them. So now we have this attack on Israel being called the second 9/11. And it is tragic. It was so abhorrent, this attack. I had to wonder. I mean, I've heard that the political arm of Hamas said they had no intention of doing this kind of an assault. And, of course, the whole thing about the beheaded babies and the rape women.
Oh, it was all crap. It's all discounted.
It turned out that was false. And Biden said it. I was just sick to hear him just parrot that propaganda. I think he's learned a few things, but I think this has hurt him, frankly.
Well, he's not a legal prey. He's unelected. He's illegal. He's a fraud. He's a pervert. I could go on, but that's enough. He's a career criminal hiding behind
his
politics. Oh God, he's the Biden family, Hunter, the brother, I forget his name, and Joe. Oh, they've got so much on them. Look how quickly they impeached Trump. There's no impeachment for Biden. It's all money. There's control. Don't discount the Jeffrey Epstein thing either. That's one way they bring people under complete control, real quick.
Oh, you mean compromise them?
Oh, yes.
Yep. Yeah.
So Biden is an imbecile. He shouldn't be in there. Shame on the American people for allowing that to happen. He supposedly got 83 million votes, more votes than any presidential candidate in American history. I don't think so. No. Not a chance.
Well, I have to say, I think Trump is 10 times worse. And
Trump,
for me,
Trump was a terrible disappointment. He had 4 years to do so. He did nothing.
Yeah.
Next to nothing. He's a fraud.
And now he's become a total fascist. I mean, this is the danger we're in now, because, you know, Biden does not look good and he's losing a lot of power. But to me, Trump is even worse. And what are we going to do? Because Trump is taking us in the fascistic direction.
Well, we have to wrap this up, Charlotte, but very quickly. Yes, you have very good points. But I really think that whoever's in the White House is not running the show. So I take some consolation in that. It doesn't really matter. But the worst part of it is the people who are running the show are even worse than the people in the White House. So I think it's a lot of bread and circuses for the people. I do, honestly. Let me mention your book here, then we have to say goodnight.
Sure.
It's Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy as Charlotte's Father, and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil. Half a trillion dollars worth of oil and gas known to be right under Gaza and the West Bank. So do the math. It's right there.
And Israel. The half a trillion involves that whole area. But
gotcha.
Definitely billions under their territories, yes.
I got it. Very good.
I have a website called Follow the Pipelines, by the way, and another one called charlottedennett.com. That's about my legal work and my investigative work. But I want to really I don't usually do this, but I am urging people to get a hold of this book because it does educate you a lot about what's been behind all of these endless wars. So if you want to educate yourself, it's there. The Palestine Chronicle said this is an amazing piece of historical writing. Students, foreign affairs experts, and officials should have this work as required reading. A lot of other great reviews, but I'm saying this. I don't make a lot of money from what I write because I write truth to power. I've had books suppressed.
Well,
but
you've been a wonderful,
can help you understand.
Wonderful source. Thank you for being here. I hope to talk to you again. This is it's a wonderful thing to hear somebody with such a great grasp of what's really going on there. We don't hear that
very
often.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte, very much. You take care.
Yep. Okay. Same to you. Bye.
All right. Okay, we'll be right back. Running a little late.